Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
You're listening to No Huddle Radio on the Packers Talk Radio Network, your home for in-depth and thoughtful Packers analysis. I'm joined by my good friend Gil Martin. He's a writer for the Packers Post and Cheesehead TV. And I'm your host, JJ Leahy. We're here to talk Packers because you're all here for one thing, and that's a love for Green Bay football. We're going to hop in and talk about a couple of guys, Jerron Reed and Keyshawn Dixon, that have been on the Packers' new roster for a minute, and it's time for us to talk about them. We kind of wanted to do it last week, honestly, but we ended up going long, ended up having a heated debate. I was chuckling at how many people commented on the fact that we did really get into it and argue with each other on the last episode, but I was surprised listeners were not weighing in with their own opinion and saying who they agreed with. I was really expecting to hear a lot of like, well, I mean, obviously people were going to write in and say, oh, JJ was clearly right because he usually is. But, you know, you might get a few fringe lunatics who think that Gil had some good points to make too. Point being, I had a lot of fun getting into it, getting all feisty with you, Gil. We're going to talk about Let's do Jerron Reed first, because I think that's the one clearly that is expected to be the bigger contributor right away. Jerron Reed is a big name guy because he was a second round pick back in 2016. Let's see, kind of a early to mid second round pick for the Seattle Seahawks. End up last year playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. And there is a perception out there that we just signed like a stud among studs and that this is going to be defense changing. And I mean, so Gil, should we just say, yes, that's the case, and then just end the podcast?
No.
All right. That does it for today. We'll be right back here next week. So here's the good news with Jerron. The good news with Jerron is that he did end the season on a 5-game hot streak. His PFF grades had been in the 40s for most of the season. He's kind of a hot, cold guy. And when he's cold, he's really cold. You don't want to see 40s. There's a couple of players on the roster last year that we had who would routinely grade out in the 40s, and their names were, like Oren Burks, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the caliber of player who grades out in the 40s. Now, you had for a while, Royce Newman was grading out that way, and we were extremely concerned and calling for him to be benched because he was such a liability for a while. Thankfully, turned it around. 60 is average. So here's Jerron Reed starting in week 17 against Cincinnati. 66.2. Then against Denver, 67.6. Against Pittsburgh, 66.5. That's three competent performances in a row. Average. He also, prior to that 3-week competent streak, he had been on a 6-week stretch of being a really good tackler. And actually, prior to that, for the whole season, he had been turning in pretty much every other week. He would turn in either a 70s grade in tackling or a 20s. I mean, there was nothing in between. Like, his seriously, goes starting week one, 25, 67, 68, 26, 71, 30, 26. Like, he's hot or cold when it comes to tackling.
Right. When he's good, he's real good. And when he's bad, ooh, look out.
Exactly. So starting in week 10, all of a sudden, he figured out tackling. And from then on, his lowest grade was week 10, which was a 68, which is fine. All his other ones were, oh, I missed it. He did have a 67 in week 16. Who cares about that? So he had that, like I said, that 3 week stretch from week 17 through the wild card round. Then in the divisional round, he turned in an 84.9 overall grade, which include a 90 run defense grade. Fantastic. But
not typical for him.
It's not typical for him to turn in that many good performances in a row. He's been a guy who can, like, 1 week out of five, he'll turn in a performance like that. And the weeks all around that are sandwiching it in are 20s through 40s. All right. And then you get that one, like, 84 right in the middle there, which he did in week 13. His grades, 39, 49, 47, 40, 70, 48, 84, 65, 43, 43. So he's got that little spike. This is kind of who he's been. A guy who he reminds you of, kind of, is MVS. He'll have a stretch of really bad games, and then he'll just turn it on and be white hot for a while, and then kind of fall back off and be well below subpar for another disappointing stretch where he kind of just disappears. But then, so there's one more game in the season. How does he finish it out? Pretty strong game. 82 overall grade, 77 run defense, 71 tackling. He doesn't really bring anything in the pass rush category. He had a total of 4 sacks on the season, which I don't super care about your sack numbers. I will care a lot more about your total pressures. His pressures, he had 33 pressures on how many attempts? Where's the pass rush snaps? Pass rush snaps. Of course, they're not just going to give it to me real easy.
Oh, no, that would be too much to ask for.
All right. I don't see it, but I know that. He had 843 snaps overall. Where's the pass rush? Come on. I see the run defense snaps. Come on. Where's my, it's just me. I'm the one missing it. I know it's here and I'm just missing
it's there.
Still on 800 snaps to only have 33 pass pressures is not great. But you know, he's an interior defender. You're not expecting him to provide a massive amount in his pass rush ability.
Right.
And that run defense, if you're thinking that maybe that 5 week stretch that he finished the season up with is kind of where he's going to pick up again in a new system with Joe Barry, that's encouraging. We saw Dean Lowry took a big step last year in Joe Barry's scheme. Overall, though, still run defense across the board for the Packers was quite poor. And if you would believe it, Jerron Reed's 2021 performance, with all these 45, 43, 32, 35, you know, mixed in with the 70s and the 60s and the 290s, Jerron Reed actually would be the second best tackler or run defender on the Packers' entire 2021 defense. That's how bad everybody else played. You know, and we don't like bringing bad news like that, but sometimes we just have to. So, I've been talking long enough. Gil, I want you to.
I put it into perspective. It's interesting that you used MVS as the comparison. And I think in some ways it's a good comparison, because what was MVS's role in the offense? He was not the go-to guy. He was a role player who was there to do a specific thing, which on occasion he did exceptionally well. And on other occasions, he would disappear. Kenny Clark is the number one guy on that defensive line. This acquisition does not change that. If you view Reed as a complementary player, it is definitely, as you explained, an upgrade over what we had in 2021 at the position. It's, we're not laying out a whole lot of money cap wise for this. Yep.
$3.2 million total.
Right. $3.2 million total. It's a veteran, experienced player for an interior defensive lineman. He gives you more push in the pass rush than most. And again, you're not asking him to be the guy. So if you get, even if you get 2021 Reed again in 2022, it's an upgrade for the Packers defense. It's, there's experience there. There's a little bit of push from the interior. It also gives Kenny Clark a little bit more flexibility as to where he lines up on any given play. And that can help Joe Barry create some favorable matchups and to keep defenses guessing. To keep offenses guessing a little bit more as to what formation the Packers are in, who's stunting, who's coming, who's dropping back. All of these things are additions. Now, is this an earth-shattering signing that all of a sudden makes the defensive line a strength of this team? No, it's not. But is it a fairly good upgrade at a reasonable price? Yes, it is. He's not a Pro Bowl player. I don't think anyone pretends he's a Pro Bowl player.
Oh, there are people who pretend he's a Pro Bowl player. Okay. They are on Twitter.com. I will tell you that, sir.
There's a lot of things on Twitter that you could point to.
Some of them are very prominent podcast hosts. I'll tell you that as well.
Okay. But I'll say this. It's an upgrade. It's a low risk, probably moderate reward kind of a signing. Mm-hmm. I like the signing, but I'm not sitting here proclaiming him to be the second coming. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. I want to compare him to two guys. One is Dean Lowry, who he's going to split time with. The other is Kingsley Keke, because Keke is who he's replacing.
Right.
I think if Kingsley Keke is still on this team, Jerron Reed is not on this team. And what I really love about the Jerron Reed signing, because I do like it, what I do love about it, this is very similar to the move that the Packers made a year ago when they brought back Kevin King. And the move they made the year prior when they signed Devin Funchess. Now, Kevin King and Devin Funchess, both those guys, I would say that did not pan out. Clearly with Devin Funchess, because he didn't even play because he opted out for COVID. But with Kevin King, did you get $5 million worth of production out of him? I would say you didn't. With both those two moves, I don't think that you got the good value for the contracts you gave him. But what that those signings provided and what the Jerron Reed signing provides this year is those were positions, cornerback, wide receiver, and now defensive line, where you have a need and you would like to address it in the draft, but you don't want to be stuck in a spot where you have to make a signing. Jerron Reed provides you a baseline, a floor of, listen, our defensive line is going to be at least this good. It's going to have at least Jerron Reed and Dean Lowry next to Kenny Clark, and you can live with that.
Right.
Do you want to improve it, improve on it in the draft? Yeah, you'd like to, but you have so many other needs, offensive line, wide receiver, safety, probably tight end, that you have a much higher priority on now because you have Jerron Reed here. Now you can just take a defensive lineman if a guy falls into position, and you don't have to take an early swing at defensive line over one of those other positions. So I really like that. And also, so since we're going to compare him to Dean Lowry, let's look at Dean Lowry's contract. Looked at Dean Lowry's contract?
Must we?
I will say, so I do like Dean Lowry. I know he's a pariah to a lot of Packers fandom. I like Dean Lowry. I'd like to keep him around for a while. This is a guy who needs an extension so badly.
Yeah, to lower that cap hit.
He's $8 million in 2022, and that includes four, am I reading this correctly? Let's see, three, Okay, $3.6 million in 2023, 2024, 2025 that are void years that really are just spreading out the cap hit from his 2021 season. So he's $8 million bucks plus that 3.6, which I just can't.
It's
painful. But here's the thing. So he is 28. So if you were to turn those void years into real years, give him a little bit of extra money so that he's making, say, $6 or $7 million a year. And actually, I think you could up that a bit because the salary cap is going up. So in a few years, that $6 or $7 million is going to be peanuts. You could sign him to something that looks maybe a little bit more like $7-8 million a year and structure it so that it's heavier toward the end. You're looking at by the time that 2025 season finishes, he'll be 31 and you can move on from him at that point. You're not giving him $11 million just to be here in 2022. And I think that he is good enough. He provides that rotational depth and just some solid play that you really do benefit from. I would just like to turn those void years into some real years, give him a little bit extra money, keep him around, lower his cap hit for right now. That's what I would do. And I do expect the Packers to at least restructure him further later in this season, maybe looking around like June or so, which is, I think, the time of year they restructured him last year. So,
well, you have to wait till June 1st.
Yes, June 1st. Yes, that's why they did it. Yep.
Right. I mean, look, the thing about Dean Lowry, to me, he is a useful player. He is a role player, but a useful player. He's just not worth $8 million a year in cap hit. That's, you know, that's the issue with me. I think he's...
Yeah, not in 2021, 2022 cap hit, but in 2025 cap hit, is he worth $8 million? I think he is. I think in three years from now, $8 million is going to feel a lot more like what $4 or $5 million feels like right now.
Except he may not be the same player 3 years from now at the age of 31 that he is at the age of 28. But again, we have to cross that bridge when we get a little closer to it. The big thing about... Go ahead.
But you could move on from him sooner. Right. You're not giving him all this guaranteed money. You're lowering some cap hit. You still have some dead cap if you moved on from him at age, say, 30.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not forced to keep him and keep paying that out.
Correct.
You would have about the same amount of dead cap you got right now, maybe a little bit less, and you keep him for a little bit longer, and he's cheaper because the market is so much higher at that point.
Right. It's a lower percentage of your overall cap. The other thing, though, when you start comparing Reed and Lowry, and you talked about what the signing of Reed does. The other thing it does is almost certain the Packers will use at least one day three pick to bolster the interior defensive line. But what it does is it makes it so that you don't need to rely on that player right away. It buys you time. And so that player becomes a special teamer, and maybe if they show enough in the preseason and in training camp, a rotational player on the defensive line, and then you bring them along more slowly, and maybe in a year or 2 years, that player develops into a starter or a more regular part of the rotation. So it buys you time and it gives you that baseline that you talked about. So I think in a lot of ways, it's a win-win kind of a situation. Again, is it moving the needle so much that all of a sudden defensive line is a strength for this defense? No, but it definitely bolsters it, steadies it, adds, buys you time for some of your younger players. And I'll include TJ Slayton in that list of younger players who's already been drafted. I think overall, it's just a smart, efficient use of cap space to solidify a weakness, previous weakness on this team.
Yeah, and I'm not expecting anything from TJ Slayton in year two. I think in year three, you want to see him really be a nice rotational player, at least on the level of Tyler Lancaster, maybe Dean Lowry already.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to be leaning on Slayton in year two because I don't think he's going to deliver. Kingsley Keke to me is the guy that you have to compare this to the most because it is pretty much a one-to-one replacement here. You know, and by the way, and Kingsley Keke missed a substantial amount of time toward the end of the season, first with injury and then, you know, weirdness and, you know, he gets cut and all that stuff. But if you're looking at what do these guys do well? And I think if you want to have any sense of optimism at all, you have to kind of throw out weeks 1 through 9 for Jerron Reed because they're just bad. He was a very bad football player from weeks 1 through 9 in 2021. Starting in week 10 and on, his numbers look pretty similar across the board to Kingsley Keke. Now, one difference that you're going to see. So in run defense, Jerron Reed is a noticeably better run defender than Kingsley Keke was. That was not his strong suit. Kingsley Keke was always much better in pass rush, which is obviously an area that, like we said, that Jerron Reed struggles. Jerron Reed's pass rush grade was 56, mm-hmm. and Kingsley Keke was all the way up at a 73, which is a really good grade. And then, like I said, run defense, Kiki's grade was 48, pretty poor. Jerron Reed's is 54, which is still not fantastic. But like I said, that is including weeks 1 through 9. And if you take those out, then his run defense grade is up in the high 60s, much more palatable. You're really hoping and expecting that Joe Barry is going to get him to continue that production he was putting out at the end of the year last year. And you're putting that on the coaches and you're putting that on Jerron Reed to say, look, you're on a 1 year prove it deal here.
Yep.
You need to show us and the other teams in the NFL that you have what it takes that you should be getting big boy money next year. And look, call it the Devondre Campbell, Rasul Douglas pitch. You saw what these guys did. And, you know, they weren't even high draft picks like you were. You were a former second round pick. Come to Green Bay, learn from Joe Barry, put up big numbers, and then go get your paycheck. Go get paid, big boy. That's the sales pitch here. And I think you're going to have Joe Barry in his ear all year telling him, dude, you need to step up. We need the guy that you were at the end of last season, not the guy you were at the beginning of last season.
Yeah, and let's hope we can get more of that. It look, it's hard for me to be honest with you. If you were to say you throw out weeks 1 through 3, 1 through 4, yeah, I could do that. Throwing out weeks 1 through 9 is more than half the season. That's a little rich for my blood.
Absolutely.
So, you know, when you say something like that, I go back to thinking about Darnell Savage, and he had a great last 7 games in 2020. Did not carry over to 2021. Here's mm-hmm. a stat, though, that I wanted to look at as far as Jerron Reed is concerned. And it goes like this. According to ProFootballReference.com, last year in 17 games, Jerron Reed had 12 quarterback hits.
Mm-hmm.
In last year in 16 games,
yeah, hits Clark, plus sacks. He had 8 hits and 4 sacks. So you combine those two, yeah.
Okay, Kenny Clark had 13.
Uh-huh.
Now, Clark had 4 sacks, but those numbers, very, very similar. And I don't think we're going to get this again, but you go back to 2018, he had 24 quarterback hits and 10.5 sacks. Now, I think those days are probably behind him as far as being, you know, that statistically outstanding, but he had 6.5 sacks in 2020 in Seattle, so it's not that far right. behind him, I think.
And he is a guy who definitely gets a high sack to pressure ratio.
Yes,
but his pressures are really low. You're talking about the sack numbers or the hit numbers being similar between Kenny Clark and Jerron Reed. If you look at the pressure rate, it's not even close. Last year, Kenny Clark had 68 pressures. Jerron Reed had 33. So less than half.
Right.
On a very comparable number of snaps. Actually, Jerron Reed played about 20 snaps more than Kenny Clark did on the season. So when it comes to how often are you actually getting home and sealing the deal compared to how many times you're able to do anything at all, he's sealing the deal an okay number of times, but he has look at the math right. It's about 94% of the time that he is trying to get a pressure on the quarterback, he's not doing anything at all and is not impacting the offense in any way.
Well, look, again, but it also depends on the system. And defensive linemen for the Packers, you know, you want to get push, but you're not going to get a lot of sacks from your interior linemen. I mean,
you do want to collapse the pocket, though.
Right. You want to get that push. That's what I just said. I mean, look, Kenny Clark had 4 sacks last year. 4. Not a very high number, but considering the way the defense is set up and the way it works, you take the pressures and the hits and the sacks that you get from Clark and you add the edge rushers that Green Bay can throw at you and you'll be fine.
And like you say, defensive tackle is different than edge rusher. If Preston Smith turns in a 4 sack season, we all are calling for his head. Kenny Clark turns in a 4 sack season and you go, but he's a defensive tackle. I mean, come on, what do you really want from him?
Right, and if Jerron Reed, who is your second best pass rusher from the interior line, turns in 4 sacks, I think you're pretty happy.
Yeah. Dean Lowry was a sack machine last year compared to who he's ever been in the past.
Right, 5.5, right?
You want to talk about Keyshawn Nixon?
Sure.
There's not a lot to talk about, but there's a couple things. There's a couple little things. So Keyshawn Nixon, I think that the assumption when we brought him in, so he's a cornerback formerly of the Las Vegas Raiders. So he spent some time on Rich Bisaccia's special teams unit out there. You want the good news or you want the bad news?
Well, let's do the bad news first.
All right. The bad news is he stinks on special teams. He's just the worst on special teams. He had one game last year where he graded out as an 80. He had 2 games where he graded out in the 60s. Every other game last year was like horrific on special teams. And he played a lot of special team snaps. If you look over 2020 and 2019, his special teams grades weren't much better there. He had a 43 overall grade on the season in 2020. And then in 2019, he had a 40.5. So as far as a special teams contributor goes, the dude is not bringing it. And I'm a little surprised that Rich Bisaccia is advocating for bringing him in. He handled a couple of returns. I think he's done 5 returns. And he averages, I just moved away from the page. What was it? 7 yards per return.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Special teams. This is what I always do.
Last year it was, it was 7 yards per kick return.
Yep. And I think he had 2 punt returns, didn't he?
No, he had 3 kick returns in each of 2019 and 2020. Not enough of a sample size to really judge much.
Right. Not enough to be like, oh yeah, I can see why Rich Bisaccia said, hey, Goody, this is my guy right here. Bring him in. You ready for the good news now?
Yeah, go for it.
He's not horrible on defense, actually. So he's a 2019 undrafted free agent. And if you look at his grades over the last few years on defense, he started out real bad. And then he kind of has gotten steadily better over the 3 years he's been in the league. And Pack Daddy over on the Packernet podcast, dear friend of the show, was the guy who noticed this. But when he's playing in the slot, he grades out in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. When he is playing as a nickel or a box safety, which they've had him do a few times, when they put him on the boundary, he's a putrid defender. But when you put him in the slot, he is quite good. And you look at some of the teams that he's gone up against. He played Denver twice last year. Played pretty good. Denver has had some pretty good wide receivers over there. He also played against Cleveland. I think he was lined up against Odell in that game. No, that was week 15. So no. That would have been Jarvis Landry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But his slot numbers are pretty good. When you put him anywhere else on defense, it's painful. But when you put him in the slot, and this is why, you know, it kind of gets my gears turning a little bit as I'm thinking about Eric Stokes and the heck is the guy's name we've been talking about for months? Rasul Douglas. You don't want those guys anywhere near the slot.
Right.
Because they're with their makeup and the kind of play style they have, they thrive on the boundary. You also got Jair, who can play in the slot, and he was a slot corner at Louisville. But I mean, is that really where you want to put your best cornerback? Is stick him in the slot full time? I don't think so. I think that you want your best cornerback on the best receiver. So there's a bunch of times when you're kind of wishing that you had Chandon Sullivan, when you're wishing that Shamar Jean Charles was going to step up and be the guy that you kind of drafted him to be, except that he's still just a second-year player. I'm wondering if Keyshawn Nixon actually is going to have a role on defense. I think for sure they're going to have him competing for a starting job on defense in the preseason, you know, during OTAs, seeing what he can do. I think as a slot corner, I think that he is very comparable to what we just lost in Chandon Sullivan when he went to the Vikings.
Yeah, and he's also, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like he is what they wanted Yadam to be, but he never really became as far as that goes. But yeah, I mean,
you know, man, I was having such a good day. Why did you have to bring that name up?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it'll be, look, again, useful pieces to the puzzle. And I'm intrigued to see, there's got to be a reason why the special teams coach brings him in. And, you know, I've read and heard things saying that this shows that he does have some influence over roster decisions, a player who he's familiar with. So let's see where this plays out. And
yeah, because it wasn't all on the coaching last year on special teams. Were we ever giving Mo Drayton a pass? I don't think at any point in the season we gave him a pass, but also the players need to step up and play better. There's a lot of times when you had players who know better, who have been around for a long time, doing this for a long time, just sucking at their jobs on special teams. Now, it's the coach's job to get in their face and make them play better. But also you need the players to play better. And it wasn't just the vets. You don't want your vets out there. You want guys more along the lines of a Keyshawn Nixon who can be out there on special teams as that kind of being their big contribution to the team. You want those special teamers. And I think if you look at the bottom of the roster, we don't really have a lot of those guys. So I like that Bisaccia is bringing in a guy that he knows. Is Nixon going to work out on special teams? My numbers say probably not, but he might. And I like that Bisaccia has Gutekunst's ear, because this clearly was a move influenced by Bisaccia. And now that he's in the building, Matt LaFleur and Joe Barry are also going to want to get their hands on him for defense as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, one of those situations where if this doesn't work, if you cut him in training camp, no big cap hit, no big concern about that. This is a low risk kind of a move. It's a player your new special teams coordinator is familiar with. I'm intrigued. Again, not saying this is like the difference between winning and losing a playoff game, but it's a step in the right direction. And it's, again, low risk as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, and I like his measurables. He ran a 4.42 40 time. The average for cornerbacks is a 4.48. So he is fast. You know, according to the league average, he's 5'10", 193. That's, you know, a slot corner build. Again, I think that there's a reason he's struggling when you put him on the boundary. You have him try and play safety. I think at 193, he's not too small to play safety, but he's a little on the small side.
Right.
And just when you look at what kinds of things you're asking your slot corner to do, seems like this is a really good fit for him that has yielded results in the past. So I'm excited to see. I think he is going to play some snaps on defense, and I hope that it's just in the slot. Because I think that he could really thrive there. You want to say?
Go ahead.
I was going to talk about Mark Murphy.
Okay.
You saw Mark Murphy's comments yesterday, talking to Larry McCarron, our dear friend Larry McCarron. Who? Yep. Fun fact: I don't know if our listeners know this. Larry McCarron came on No Huddle Radio one time and did a full interview with us, and we had some tech issues and we lost the recording.
Yeah.
So we want to get him back on sometime, but Larry McCarron was on our show, and you should know that because Gil's the guy who got him to come on the show. And Gil, should we tell him who's going to come on the show soon, or should we wait and just
let's wait
when it happens?
Let's wait. He's away. He'll hopefully be back in a week or two, and we'll line that up. But
all right.
But we do have a commitment. Hopefully from this former Packer player, and I'm excited about it. So
Mark Murphy was going to come on the show at one point, and the timing was really unfortunate because the Aaron Rodgers big bombshell blew up around the draft last year. And we were scheduled to have him come on the show like immediately after the draft to talk about the draft. Mm-hmm. And then Aaron Rodgers blew up in our faces. And so Mark Murphy, had some moments over the summer where he was kind of putting his foot in his mouth, and it probably was a good thing that we didn't have him on the show because we might have asked him a question that he shouldn't be answering. But Mark Murphy was talking to Larry McCarron, who is a very skilled interviewer, unlike ourselves, and he had a line that got a lot of people talking. He was talking about, he said, listen, A lot of fans are kind of freaking out, panicking, saying, who the heck is Aaron going to throw the ball to? Well, don't worry. We don't play a football game for quite some time. We have the draft. And with all of our draft capital that we have here, he said, let's just say I think it's going to be very interesting. And a lot of people took that and ran with it. I got excited when I saw it.
Sure.
I don't think that it's wise to try and read too much into it and say that, oh, the Packers are working on a trade right now, you know, whether that's like a pre-draft trade up in the draft to try and get up to like pick 10 or something like that. A lot of fun things you could run with. I don't think that he's saying that. I think he's saying, look, the last time the Packers came away from the NFL draft with four top 60 players was 1967, when Gil, you were just a young lad of 55. How old were you in 1967? And also, how many teams were in the NFL in that year?
In the NFL, I'm going to say 14 or so, I think. And I was born in 1967.
You were born in 1967? All right, I got the full list here on Wikipedia, very trusted source. So there were 16 teams. Already the NFL Central Division was the Packers, Bears, Lions, and Vikings. So good stuff there. But 1967 was the last time the Packers came away with four top 60 players. I don't think that they're going to come away with that because I do think that they're going to trade around. I think they're going to trade up from 22 and they're going to trade back from 28. That's my prediction, because when I look at the consensus big board, I see like picks 1 through 15. You got some just crazy talented guys. And then starting in like pick 20 through about 38, I think it's just a mediocre no man's land, because it's like guys of the same caliber of player as like 40 through 60.
Mm-hmm.
So I, and you know what, if you can find a sucker who you can trade back with, and maybe you get like two picks between 40 and 60. I think I would rather have those than pick 28, because I don't like the guys available at 28, but whatever. But I think that the Packers are going to try and trade up from 22, because they're not usually in a position where, number one, their draft pick is this close to that top echelon of talent from like 1 through 15.
Right.
And they have all these extra picks this year. They have so much capital. They have more picks than just about anybody in the league this year. And I think if you look back at the 2020 draft and Brian Gutekunst traded up to try and get Justin Jefferson or Brandon Ayuk. Those are the two guys that we think that he was targeting based on things that he said, based on things that other teams have said. Those two players went right before us to the Vikings and the Niners, obviously. And the Packers were forced to just, okay, we're going to have to go ahead and take Jordan Love here. I think they learned something from that. I think that they are looking at that and saying, we tried to be aggressive to go up and get our guy in that year, and we weren't aggressive enough.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we have more freaking ammo, so let's use that ammo to trade up. Burn one of these second round picks if you want to, because you got two of them. Do it. Move up. Go get your guy. Yeah. So I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, but I don't think it's prudent to read into this as Mark Murphy trying to tip his hand and hint to us about what they're going to do. I think you just look at all the picks that they have, and he's saying it's going to be an interesting draft. Heck yeah, it's going to be an interesting draft. Four top 60 picks. What's more interesting than that?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And I think, you know, Murphy also sort of hinted at something in a different way that I think he may be playing coy a little bit, where he sort of downplayed the possibility of trading for a veteran receiver to replace Devontae.
Oh boy. We spent 40 minutes on this last week.
I know. But I think what he's trying to do is to try to get it out there that the Packers are not desperately looking for player, and therefore will not overpay for that player. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination he's not looking for a player. Or the other possibility is that it will not be the most blockbuster kind of a trade. It'll be more of a, you know, fill-in kind of a player. And then the draft pick is the heir apparent who's going to come in. But either way...
Oh, you're speaking my language, Gil. Oh, you're agreeing with me.
Either way, it was an interesting little quote from Murphy and Gutekunst. And they're sort of playing...
And LaFleur.
And LaFleur. They're sort of playing the game, and I expect nothing less.
I think it's really interesting and kind of amusing, the difference in how those three guys talk when they talk to the media. All right, so you got LaFleur, who kind of wears his heart on his sleeve. I mean, like, the number of times, what was the guy's name, Lance somebody, that he just, like, kind of blew up at last year when I think his name is Lance something, and he was asking for, like, the 15th question in a row about Aaron Rodgers' vaccination status, and Matt LaFleur had like already answered a couple in a row by saying, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And I don't care. And Lance comes in with some ivermectin question. LaFleur looks like he wants to cry. He's just like, I don't know what that is. And I don't care. So he's down in, where are they? Are they in Florida or California? Florida. I forget. It's one of those places right with beautiful weather, unlike what I have here. And the rest of us Packer fans have up here. And LaFleur is like, yeah, man, I just really think that in this draft, we need to like get some wide receivers with a lot of speed. That's what we need. And you got Gutekunst, and you're like, so, you know, talk to us about your team. Yeah, I really like my team. Like, don't worry. It's all cool. Team is great. We're going to draft some guys. I got some guys I like, but, you know, I'm just going to have to see who's available, and that's about it. I'm not gonna, you know, position. Who thinks about position? We'll just see what happens, and don't worry about it. The team's great, and LaFleur's over here like, oh, we're doomed, and we have to draft the fastest receiver in the draft, and multiple of them, and even then, I just don't know. And then he got Mark Murphy
comes along and he's like, hey guys.
Everybody's playing their role.
It's you know what? It's a soap opera. It's a lot of fun. I love football and Packers football, and this is my favorite time of the year. I'm so having so much fun in the draft. Are you watching a lot of draft prospects these days right now, Gil?
I've started that process. Yeah. Looking forward to the draft. I still prefer the season to the off season. I mean, you know, but lead up to the draft, I mean, this is the highlight of the off season in my mind.
No question. I'd say the two positions that I have not even started on yet are linebacker and running back. Part of it is that I always feel like any time I spend trying to evaluate linebackers is a complete waste because it's such a crapshoot. So I only have three linebackers even ranked at all. And then after that, it's a pile of guys. And I'm saying, yep, kind of heard of their name, but that's about it. Okay.
I don't think that's going to be a number one priority for the Packers anyway. So you got to look, I think, a little later down in the draft board anyway. When it comes to interior linebackers, edge rusher, I still think they may go that route, especially if they hold on to all four of those, you know, first two round picks.
Yep.
But we'll see.
Well, I think so. And I think that, if you look at the Packers big board, they're going to have a top echelon of dudes that they expect, you know, like this is our like 1 through 5 or whatever. And that's not going to be the same as everybody else's board. Mm-hmm. And so if, let's say that guy number 5 out of that list falls and he's there at like pick 12, no question in my mind, the Packers are doing whatever it takes to move up and grab that guy because they never exist in a world where it's possible to move up and get that guy.
Right.
And this year they have the ammunition and they're saying, this guy we have is the 5th best player in this draft. He should not be here at pick 12. So whatever it costs to go up and get him, it's worth it because we're already underpaying because he should be pick number 5, not pick number 12. So heck yeah, we're going to go get him. And Gutekunst, absolutely, one of his biggest priorities is creating value, is looking for opportunities to underpay, whether that is drafting a good player later in the draft, whether that's finding a hidden gem in Devondre Campbell or Rasul Douglas, and getting a year for cheap out of them, where you still get an elite performance. He's got the way that he can get ahead is by taking the capital that they do have and getting the most value per penny out of that. That's how you can compete with the LA Rams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Kansas City Chiefs, those other teams who have some of the best rosters in football. You gotta win the dollars to to football player value conversion race.
Yeah,
and
when you're winning consistently and picking in the, you know, 20s every year, you have to be able to do that to stay successful.
I think if you were to build the perfect GM, it would be a combination of Ted Thompson and Brian Gutekunst, and you would say, Brian, you can draft the first two rounds. Ted, you have rounds 3 through 7.
I think that's the perfect round GM. Three. We have to stay away from round 3.
Well, I'm talking younger Ted Thompson, not senile Gil Martin age. Ooh. Ted Thompson.
Ouch. Ouch. Not just Alrighty, me, well, but Ted.
Hey, you know what? The leg up that you have over me is I'm not old enough to drink yet. It's not really true, but
no, it's
but
not.
I am a young fry. Alrighty, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember to send us your questions on Twitter at JJ Leahy at Gil Packers. You can also give us a call at 231-714-4195, and you can leave a voicemail. We'll play it on the show if you got a question. We'd love to do that, especially around draft time. Pick a guy that you want us to study. Leave us a voicemail about him, and we'll look into him for you, give you our take. That'd be a lot of fun. We'd like to feature you guys. So we'll be right back here next week. Follow us on Twitter. Again, that's at Gil Packers, at JJ Leahy to stay up to date on all things Packers or to ask us questions. You can email us at asknohuddle@gmail.com. Make sure you're subscribed to Packers Talk on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Big thanks to PackersTalk.com for powering our show, and thank you for listening. Until next time, go Pack Go!
Go Pack Go!
You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.